This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the program, we'll be talking about obesity and the latest Mars findings. But first up, you know, many people take vitamin E supplements in the hopes that the antioxidant vitamin will ward off heart disease and cancer. But does it live up to that expectation? A study out this week in the Journal of the American Medical Association follows a group of patients taking either a daily dose of vitamin E or a placebo for 7 years to try and answer that question. And what the researchers found may surprise and disappoint you. Joining me now to talk about this study is Greg Brown, professor of medicine, University of Washington School of Medicine, and attending physician, University of Washington Medical Center in Seattle. He joins us today from Seattle. Welcome back, Dr. Brown.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
How are you?
Well, I'm recovering from a cold, but otherwise fine.
I'll join the crowd. I hope you feel better.
All right.
Have you been taking any vitamins for it?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact. My wife urges me to, but I haven't.
Well, let's talk about vitamin E. You had a study of vitamin E. Tell us what you did.
Well, the study that that was described in the Journal of the American Medical Association was by a group of Canadian investigators, including a number of sites in the United States. The finding, I actually wrote an editorial on this, mm-hmm. so I wasn't a participant in the study.
Mm-hmm.
But the finding was that over now a 7-year follow-up, patients randomly assigned to either vitamin E, 400 international units a day, or its placebo. That's a moderate dose of vitamin E. The people given vitamin E didn't have any significant reduction in cancer or any significant reduction in cardiovascular disease. There was perhaps a slight reduction in cancer on the order of a few percent. Same thing for cardiovascular disease. So the conclusion was that in this group of patients who were selected for age 55 or more, who also had established cardiovascular disease of one kind or another, and in about 20% of the cases had diabetes. So these were a pretty high-risk population for cardiovascular disease. That population did not benefit from vitamin E. If anything, there was a slight tendency, not significant, for increased cardiovascular risk. So it was a surprise. It was a disappointment. The theory that antioxidant vitamins would protect against both cardiovascular disease and cancer, which are both states of in which oxidative stress is thought to contribute to the pathology, in those cases there just wasn't any benefit, and it seemed to belie the early clinical and early population studies that were done in the early 90s. But that's the truth of medicine. Is you may develop a hypothesis, an idea that something is going to work, but the only way to really prove that is to do a prospective controlled trial where you give some people placebos and some people the treatment that you think is going to be effective.
Are you saying that this was never been tried before? I mean, we just assumed that it would be beneficial?
Well, your mother always told you to take your vitamins that were good for you, so that was sort of the beginning of the idea. Vitamins indeed are good if you're not taking very many of them. But the dose of vitamin E in this trial was about 10 times, 15 times the upper or the minimum daily requirement. So this was high dose, relatively high dose vitamin E.
Mm-hmm.
The idea came from the early 90s. There have been a number of different clinical trials, about 8 of them all told, now looking at vitamin E in various dosages. And none of those trials has had a compelling result showing that there's definitely a benefit. So I think we have to accept right now that doses of vitamin E in the anywhere from 50 to 2,000 international units a day, I think the main or the minimum daily requirement being about 30 milligram or 30 international units a day. So in the higher doses, vitamin E does not protect against oxidation. And in fact, the evidence is now very compelling in over almost 70,000 patients that have been randomly assigned to vitamin E or to its placebo.
So what about this whole theory of, of antioxidants? Does that go out the window with it?
No, I think the evidence that oxidative processes contribute to cancer and the heart disease is still very strong. And there have been some very good scientists that have worked in this area of sort of looking in the test tube and finding a relationship between oxidation and the risk or the mechanisms of atherosclerosis or cancer, creating cancer. So oxidation as a pathologic process, really, I think, is still a very viable idea. We simply haven't found an antioxidant mechanism that the vitamin D seems to effectively prevent. So I would look to the future, and there are a number of different places where oxidation mechanisms that we haven't even explored yet are beginning to be understood, and may in fact become an avenue for effective therapy in preventing cancer. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah. I think the oxidation hypothesis still is viable. It suffered some setbacks with the antioxidant vitamins E and C and beta carotene, but there are other antioxidant mechanisms that have nothing to do with E and C and beta carotene that may in fact prove to be beneficial.
Such as?
Well, there is the current interest is in an oxidation reaction catalyzed by an enzyme called myeloperoxidase. Certain proteins in the cholesterol area are oxidized by this reaction, and in fact, these oxidized proteins or cholesterol-carrying proteins appear to be markers for increased cardiovascular risk, and in fact, maybe this may be a process that we can explore further and use to design therapies that really will be effective in preventing oxidation of the cholesterol particles, and as a result, prevent the pathology that results.
Mm-hmm.
Everything applies, I think, to cancer, although I'm less of an expert on cancer. My co-author, Dr. John Crowley, has contributed most of the thoughts on cancer in this editorial.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in here. Let's go to, is it MJ in San Francisco?
Yes, that's correct. Hi, Ira. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Great. A little wet today, but in any event, my comment and my question was, it's my understanding that there is a distinct difference between the vitamin E, such as was used in this study, and vitamin E as it occurs in nature or in a food base. And it's my understanding, and I'd like to have a comment about this, that vitamin E, a more synthetic type of vitamin E, has the effect of dose dumping, which means that it provides a huge amount of antioxidants at first and then nothing for several hours, which could be compared to breathing hard for 2 hours and then not taking a breath for another 22 out of 24 hours. So it's my understanding that a food-based vitamin E could be much more effective in terms of combating free radicals and reducing oxidative stress.
Natural vitamin versus synthetic, yeah. Dr.
Exactly.
Brown?
Well, the study used natural source vitamin E, and in fact, this has been an idea that goes back to the original population studies where patients who ate a lot of vitamin E and took a lot of vitamin E in their diet, anything above about 200 international units a day, seem to have a substantial cardiovascular risk protection. And so the idea came out that dietary vitamin E was beneficial. But in fact, the current belief now is that these patients or these subjects in these population studies who were taking a lot of vitamin E were also practicing other forms of healthy lifestyle. They exercised more, smoked less. They were willing to go out and spend money in the health food stores to buy vitamin E supplements. The net effect is that there was a selection bias in the population studies that tended to favor dietary vitamin E, but not because of the vitamin E, I don't think, but in fact because people who did practice supplement use from the health food stores were actually treating themselves better in many respects, and as a result had fewer heart attacks. So it was a very impressive a pair of studies reported in 1993 in the New England Journal of Medicine that supported this idea, both in a group of nurses, large group of nurses, and a large group of physicians. And that really was the start of that and the basic biology was the start of a whole decade of believing that vitamin E was going to really be helpful. In fact, in California, according to a friend of mine down there who does research in vitamin E, it was hard to do a study because the majority of people, around 50% of people, were taking vitamin E already and wouldn't qualify for the studies. So I think that the dietary concept may have some validity. Vitamin E has a very long half-life, so I'm not sure I'm in agreement with the idea that you get a pretty early vitamin E effect and then nothing at all.
Well, a lot of people are going to be disappointed now.
I think so. You know, I've heard that about 8% of the U.S. population takes at least 400 international units of vitamin E. There's been a meta-analysis of all 8 of these vitamin E studies that suggests that there is a small but definite and significant risk of increased cardiovascular events among people who are taking at least 400 international units of vitamin E.
So you could be hurting yourself.
You could be hurting yourself. Not a great deal, but you know, for 3 to 5% increase in risk over a large population can be a lot of deaths. And so it has to be thought about and considered as a... But the real reason not to take vitamin E is that it doesn't seem to work, it doesn't seem to help.
You're wasting your money.
You're wasting your money. The other issue is that you may be deluding yourself. If you're taking vitamin E to prevent cancer and heart disease, you may be avoiding other proven methods for prevention, lowering your cholesterol, stopping smoking, controlling your blood pressure.
Dr. Brown, I got to go.
Okay.
But thank you for taking time to talk with us.
All right. Bye-bye. Good to talk to you.
Greg Brown, professor of medicine at University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle. We're going to take a short break, change gears, and go on to our next part. And stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.